course, we've been now 3 weeks today into the subject of money and finances from a Christian and biblical perspective. And we said how the Bible has so much to say about money, and much of it is in the way of warning. And it instructs us in the dangers that attend money and material possessions. And that's what we've been beginning with in this series, are some of the dangers attached to money. And just to, again, go through to remind ourselves what we've covered so far, how money is temporary and uncertain. Money is said to be a vanity. It's vain or nothing. Money is deceitful. Money leads many to pride and arrogance and carnal security. And along with that, we tend to put our trust in money. And money makes us to forget God. So much so that once we forget God, we forget our proper duties toward each other, and money can make of men to be oppressors and persecutors of others for the sake of gaining greater wealth and other reasons. Another thing, of course, once we forget God, God is our true happiness, and so money comes in its place, in the place of God, and we seek our happiness and satisfaction from money and the things money can give us, but they're not to be found there. Money will fail us, and money brings many troubles with it. The more money, the more responsibilities and other things that also come into our lives. Jesus referred to money by the terms of the mammon of unrighteousness. His apostle Peter called it filthy lucre, because there's often sin involved in the way that we either gain money, or that we keep our money, or in the way that we spend our money. And so unrighteousness seems to often attend it. And we also saw that though God says we're not to be lazy, we are to be diligent, we are to labor, we're not to labor with the goal in mind of becoming rich. That should not be what we set our sights on as the motive for our labors. I think where we left off last time was there. And so tonight I'd like to continue from where we left off by saying that the Bible teaches that the love of money is the root of all evil. Now, love, of course, refers to that which we value, which we have affection for, which we prize or delight in. And loving is, of course, a uniting thing. And so that which we love, we want to be near or with. But the Bible does teach us that the love of money is the root of all evil. First of all, you know, love is, or money is an unworthy object of our love. And for the sake of loving money, it leads to all kinds of sins and evil practices that that love of money brings us into. And I'd like to look at some verses along that line now. Proverbs and chapter 19. Verses 1 and 2. Better is the poor that walketh in his integrity than he that is perverse in his lips and is a fool. Right. As long as I maintain an upright, honest life, if that leads to my being poor, that's better than sinning with my words and showing myself a fool. And how many times people will say things that are not true, especially in the realm of buying and selling in order to get gain. But if we're willing to be honest and upright at all times, regardless of whether we financially suffer for it, that is much better. Also, that the soul be without knowledge, it is not good. And he that hasteth with his feet sinneth. In other words, it's a sign of lack of knowledge when we set our sights on wealth and riches to the point where we will haste with our feet, we'll make quick decisions without adequate prayer and planning and thought, and we get ourselves committed into, you know, purchases, expenses, and things of that nature that, you know, we quickly enter into, and then we spend a long time regretting and repenting of. And that's why we have to be careful that we don't rush into, you know, various schemes for getting money or spending money that would not be right. And usually it's because we get such a strong desire for something that we don't take the time to really think it through and look at it thoroughly and what the consequences will be and how it will affect our budget over the long term and things of that nature. And, you know, it's impulsive buying. I got to have it, and even though I have to squeeze to do it. And so, as I say, we make quick choices, and then we have long, slow, and painful regrets. And I think that's something that we need to keep in mind, because too often we are too hasty in the realm of finances, where a little time, prayer, and thought would save a lot of problems. Now, you talk about we shouldn't love money. What's it like when you're loved for the sake of your money? That's what verse 4 talks about. Wealth maketh many friends, but the poor is separated from his neighbor. There's a lot of people will play up to us and treat us well and act like, you know, we mean something to them, and they will speak highly of us and do things for us for one reason. They hope that they will benefit from it. That somehow, by their treating us in this way, we're going to respond by rewarding them in a financial and material way. And that is a false friend. Not I like you, but I like you for what I can get from you. And so, what a terrible thing it is to be rich and always have to be questioning and doubting the motives of people that come around you, because they may only be attracted by the wealth you have and their hopes that they might share in that by becoming your friends. But the poor, even his neighbor treats him with contempt and wants nothing to do with him, because what can he do for him? Again, that is very sad, but we should not base our love and our friendship on who has something we can get from them. And that's easy to discern. Do we try to get close to, or do we try to spend more time with, or do we treat in a special way people that we know are going to do something for us and that we can, you know, get help from, as opposed to someone that can't do a thing for us, and as a matter of fact, they need our help and our giving more than we can ever hope to get anything from them? Are we still as much their friend as anyone else? Or do we avoid them because they're a drain and they can't in any way enrich me? That's where we need to make sure our love toward others is sincere and genuine and not put on for personal benefit. And so love of money may be the root of many friendships. And the way you can find that out is if you don't get what you're looking for, then the friendship doesn't seem so important anymore. And you soon forget about them. Verse 22 says, "The desire of a man is his kindness, and a poor man is better than a liar." A lot of people will lie for the sake of gaining wealth or avoiding expense. And again, that happens very often in buying and selling. We'll try to represent a product as being much better than it really is, or we'll misrepresent its worth or whatever in order to get a greater price for it. We have to be very careful. Better to be a poor man who tells the truth and will not do anything to cheat or rob or defraud anyone else than to be a liar and wealthy. And again, I think the desire of a man is his kindness. Now, what do we desire? To do unto others as they would have, we would have them to do unto us, and we'll show them kindness. If our desire is to get them for what we can, to rob them, then we'll certainly be anything but kind. We'll lie even for the sake of, again, enriching ourselves. Proverbs 28 verse 6. "Better is the poor that walketh in his uprightness than he that is perverse in his ways, though he be rich." Now we'll be talking about ill-gotten gain. You know, how many people are perverse in their ways? They're crooked in their dealings. You know, they use all kinds of dishonest practices, and by it they seem to be prospering, and yet there is dishonest as could be. Well, if a poor man that's walking uprightly is better than that. And again, if I love wealth first, I will be willing to sin to get it, because the love of money is the root of all evil. It will pervert my ways if I love righteousness and love the Lord and desire to please Him and do what's right in His sight, regardless of the consequences to me. Then I will maintain an upright life, even though it could bring poverty with it. So where are our values? I guess what I'm saying, if I love money, having a lot of this world's goods will be more important to me than to being honest and upright. If I love what is right, I will put obeying God before any kind of earthly riches. And so again, this is what we have to try to understand. Where is our love? Proverbs 15. We already saw that money brings trouble with it. And those that are hasty to be rich, all they do is trouble their own house. Well, here's what the Bible says. "Better is little with the fear of the Lord." Now, do I fear God? That means I will depart from evil and I will keep His commands. I will put pleasing the Lord before any other consideration, including earthly gain. "Well, better is little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble therewith." Now, do we believe that? If fearing God, walking in His ways, doing His will, being an honest and upright person, if that means I'm going to struggle the rest of my life with poverty, is that really better than being willing to cut corners and compromise and maybe do a few dishonest things here and there along the way if it means a more comfortable and prosperous life? Well, that's the way to true trouble, because the way of the transgressor is hard. Sin brings only trouble. But it says, better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a stalled ox and hatred therewith. And I think I've already kind of inferred a little bit already that we need to know where our love is. If our love is for money, guess what? We will not have love for people. If our love is for money, people are just a way to get what we want. Someone to use. Someone to take advantage of. Someone that's there for our own profit. And so, if I have true love, even if all I have to eat is herbs, that's much better than the richest fare, stalled ox, and then hatred along with it. Love of money and love of people and love of God don't go together. Love of God and love of people will certainly exclude love of money. And where that true love is, that's something money can't buy. And where money will only bring trouble and hatred, a love, of course, brings joy and satisfaction. And certainly love is better than any of these temporal things that so many people love more than God. But anyway, chapter 16, verse 8, one more along this line. Better is little with righteousness than great revenues without right. That's really where we find out what we're made of. If I have the opportunity to suddenly enrich myself a great deal, if I will just sin to do it, as opposed to maintaining my integrity and doing what I know God wants me to do, though that will leave me with no gain, which will I choose? If we love money, we'll choose sin, even though we have to do wrong to get it. If we love God, then we'll do what's right and be satisfied, even with little, if that's His will for us. All right, just a couple more along this line. 1 Timothy 6:10. I think we've looked at it before, but I want to look at it from this angle. This is the verse that actually states this principle. For the love of money is the root of all evil. Now, a root is the origin and source of the life of a plant. It's from the root. It derives whatever grows. And so, whatever evil there is in the hearts and lives of men, you will find that the love of money produces that. And again, money itself is not evil. It's out of the hearts of men that proceed sins of various kinds, including covetousness or love of money. But love of money is an occasion and a opportunity for the sin of our heart to manifest itself. So this is what we're getting at here. If I have love of money in my heart, there is no possible sin under the sun that the love of money has not been the cause of, in the sense that it was for the sake of getting money, out of a love and desire for that money, that these evils have been committed. And you look around the world, it doesn't matter if it's abortion or alcohol or drugs or pornography, whatever it is, they are all big money makers. That's always the case. You know, the most wicked things imaginable are flourishing and prospering in the world because there is great gain to be had by them. And so all these evils are allowed and are committed for the sake of gaining money. And notice, here's the trouble it brings, which while some coveted after, meaning after money, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. It's not the way to happiness or to a pleasant, enjoyable life. How many drug deals go awry and you hear about how many acts of violence and murder come about because this payment's not made or whatever. You know, every time you have the love of money in the root of evils, you're going to find all kinds of crimes and calamities associated with it, and because they attend each other unavoidably. With sin comes trouble. So one more under this category, Proverbs 28 and verse 16. Talking about rulers. Now I know there's no problem in our democratic government with people being in it for what they can get to enrich themselves. Is that true? Well, here's talking about a prince. The prince that wanteth understanding is also a great oppressor. All right, so you get someone in power, the power goes to his head. He realizes how he can use that power in order to gain a lot of wealth and pleasures and privileges in the world. And so they start oppressing those under their power for their own sakes, for their own gain, and you have a miserable situation. And certainly we've seen many rulers that were nothing but money, you know, grubbers that were in their position for the sake of enriching themselves, and their people suffered for that reason. But it says, he that hateth covetousness shall prolong his days. Notice that. Someone who hates the love of money, that sounds almost like a contradiction, hates the love of money, that person will have a lengthy, happy reign. You know, he won't run into the troubles that covetousness brings, including, you know, shortened life by means of violence at the hands of those that you've defrauded or robbed or oppressed and who are out to get you for it, and all the other problems money brings from robbers and things of that nature. Hating covetousness lengthens days and makes them much more pleasant and enjoyable. All right, now, the next one kind of goes along closely with this. Ill-gotten gain. In other words, if we commit evil out of a love of money for the sake of getting it, that's ill-gotten gain. And ill-gotten gain is a curse, and it brings a curse. And this is the great... We said that money is deceitful. Oh, if I could only get it, no matter what I have to do to get it, once I have it, how happy I will be and how much better my life will be. And everything will finally go my way and my life will be a very comfortable and enjoyable one. Well, if we are willing to sin to get money, that will never be the case. And again, Proverbs is a very rich area to look for this. Proverbs chapter 1, we'll start there. Proverbs 1. Here you have some people with their heart set on gaining wealth in an unrighteous manner. And notice how they encourage each other in an evil manner. Verse 18, and they lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privily for their own lives. In other words, they're trying to set up things so they can rob someone of their money to get it for themselves. They're thieves. Notice what it says. They're laying wait for their own blood. They're secretly lurking for their own lives. What do you mean? That's not what they're trying to do. Well, that's how it ends up, regardless of what their intentions are. It says, so are the ways of everyone that is greedy of gain, which taketh away the life of the owners thereof. So you have robbers and murderers who are willing to kill and steal to get money. Well, it's out of a greed for gain they do it, and it's to their own destruction. It's a curse, not a blessing. Proverbs 10 and verse 2, it says, treasures of wickedness profit nothing. As treasures that come by wickedness are of no value whatsoever. We never gain anything by them. Matter of fact, we lose. But righteousness delivereth from death. You know, sin, the wages of sin is death. Righteousness delivers from death. So if I sin to get treasure, all I've done is I have signed my own death warrant. Chapter 13, verse 11. Wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished. Right? Any wealth we get in the wrong manner, what the Bible calls vanity, by sin and folly, it will never be able to increase or last. It will somehow be depleted. It will disappear. But he that gathereth by labor shall increase. And that's the one, other than legitimate inheritance, that's the one valid means of gaining money is labor. Honest, hard work. And that's what God blesses, and that's what brings increase. But there's a curse on wealth gotten by vanity. It's not going to continue. It's not going to remain. It will disappear. We can also look at chapter 16 again. We already saw verse 8, where better is little with righteousness than great revenues without right. It's better to have little with God's blessing than have much with God's curse. And that's the idea there. Over in chapter 20, verse 21, here's the idea of trying to get rich quick schemes. A lot of people think, I can get a lot with a little effort all at once, and then I'll be all set. Lotteries, things of that nature. Well, an inheritance may be gotten hastily at the beginning. Oh, great. Look at this, what I have. Isn't this wonderful? But the end thereof shall not be blessed. Now, don't look at these get-rich-quick schemes and think this is the way to make it and to be set up in the world, because it never works out that way. The end will not be blessed. The final result, even though it seems to bring immediate gain, it'll bring long-term curse. Chapter 21 and verse 6. The getting of treasures by a lying tongue. Why is it that used car salesmen are famous for what? Honesty and integrity. That's what you always think of when you think used car salesmen, right? There's a reason for these associations in the world. And I'm not saying used car salesmen are necessarily dishonest. I'm just saying they're involved in something that entails, very often, stretching the truth. Is that the way to say it? Not telling the whole story? Well, that's not just one area of salesmanship. But it says, the getting of treasures by a lying tongue. That's a vanity. I can just see him boasting at night. Boy, did I ever put one over at Zozo. Boy, did I ever get them. Boy, look at what I made on that. I killed him on that one. Well, you killed him, all right, but it may be more of a suicide than anything else. Because he says, that's a vanity tossed to and fro. I mean, there's a life tossed about with problems, but it's by them that seek death. Now, we can use dishonesty to get rich, but that's like tossing about a vanity and looking for death as our final payment. And what is that? That is certainly not a blessing, but a curse. Chapter 22 and verse 16. He that oppresseth the poor to increase his riches, and he that giveth to the rich shall surely come to want. Now there is a situation where a poor man is usually pretty helpless and defenseless. He can't do anything to prevent someone that has wealth and power and influence coming in and taking what little he has. And how often wealth is gained by means of taking from those who cannot fend for themselves or defend themselves from those who have, you know, power, whether with the law or the government or whatever, so that they can easily take advantage of the poor person. So they oppress the poor, they overcharge them and take advantage of them and do things that are not right for the sake of wealth, and then they'll give to the rich. Why? For what the rich will give them in return. You know, in other words, they look at that as an investment to gain more for themselves in the long run. Well, they will surely what? Come to want. That's the way to lose everything. That's the thing that God cannot look upon and allow. He will certainly curse that and not allow it to prosper in the long term. And so that's a sure way to come to poverty, not to be wealthy, because it's doing wrong to get the things of this world. Verse 22 says, rob not the poor because he's poor. Or that's the reason they do it. Not because they have a lot, but because they can't do anything to stop you. And if you rob enough poor people, accumulatively, you end up with quite a bit. So he's saying, don't do that. Neither oppress the afflicted in the gate. Why? For the Lord will plead their cause. They seem helpless, but God sees, and he will intervene in their behalf. And notice what he'll do. He'll spoil the soul of those that spoil them. In other words, while they're greedily taking the advantage of the poor and robbing them of the little they have, and rubbing their hands together and saying, look at how I'm doing. Look at what I'm able to accomplish here. Look at how much I'm making off these poor people. And what's God doing at the same time? He's blasting and withering their soul so that they end up spiritually hardened and dead and callous. And so they go on in their wickedness until judgment falls. Their soul was spoiled, which is the most important thing, while they were spoiling the houses of the poor. And so they were the losers by it. They lost their soul in the process. Chapter 28, verse 8. It says there, he that by usury and unjust gain increaseth his substance. All right, usury is charging interest. Unjust gain is any gain that we bring in sinful manner, unjust or unrighteous. That would mean we're not doing what's fair and equitable. We're somehow committing wrong business practices. We're using dishonest principles in some way to enrich ourselves. Well, if that's how we increase our substance, it won't stay with us. It says, he shall gather it for him that will pity the poor. We talked about praying for the poor and giving to the poor. Well, God says he's very pleased with that. And the ones who are trying to get rich by oppressing and taking advantage, you know, by usury and unjust gain, they're going to end up having their substance that they accumulate fall into the hands of the person that is willing to help the poor. And so they have more money to help the poor with. And again, one is oppressing the poor in order to enrich himself. The other is giving to the poor in order to help them in their need and to please God. While the one who helps the poor will end up blessed, the one who robs the poor will end up cursed. Verse 19 says, "He that tilleth his land shall have plenty of bread." In other words, how am I going to have enough to eat this year? I know. Get out there. Plow your ground. Plant your crops. Pull your weeds. And have a harvest. There's a good, honest way to gain your food. Earn your bread. And if you do that, by God's blessing, you'll have all you need. But he that followeth after vain persons shall have poverty enough. Whereas don't hang around with people that are lazy and shiftless and irresponsible and aren't working and aren't doing, you know, the things they should, because that's the way to poverty. Do your work, be diligent, avoid the people that are lazy and irresponsible, and you'll be taken care of and you won't suffer along with them. Because they will suffer if you don't gather and harvest. You will have a very miserable winter, and they will. You also read verse 20. "A faithful man shall abound with blessings." All right, now there's a beautiful verse. A faithful man is a man who trusts in God and then does what's right. All right, here's what God requires of me, and he sets himself to do that. He knows God will take care of him. He's obedient to God. He's responsible. He keeps up his duties. You know, he works and he exercises sound principles of finance. He'll abound with blessings. He'll always have enough and more. And as God takes care of him. "But he that maketh haste to be rich shall not be innocent." Right, as soon as you get that love for money and that desire to be rich quick, you're certainly not going to be faithful. And with sin comes guilt. And with guilt comes not God's blessing, but his curse. He won't be innocent. Or the margin says, unpunished. It will bring God's judgment for sure. Verse 22 says, "He that hasteth to be rich hath an evil eye." Or he gets money in his eye and his eye turns green. And he says, "That's what I want. That's what I need." And that colors all his thinking, all his planning, how he sees things. His eye becomes perverted. He can't see things as they really are. He can't see things correctly. And so everything is filtered through those green glasses he's wearing. And everything he does is based on, "I got to be rich. I got to get all I can as soon as I can." And notice, he's so set on that that he does not consider that poverty shall come upon him. In other words, he's rushing to get rich. And all he's doing is hurrying on his own poverty. So he's actually getting the very opposite of what he expected, because he's not doing it in God's way. And so God blasts all his efforts and makes sure that they do not succeed. Verse 27 says, "He that giveth unto the poor shall not lack, but he that hideth his eyes shall have many a curse." Right? There's someone in need, I should have a heart to help them and do all I can for them. But if my attitude is, "Oh, I'm too busy. I got too much going on. I got so many expenses of my own. I just can't think about this. I don't dare notice their problem because I can't take on any more financial obligations. I'm going to have to just pass on and look the other way and, you know, put on the blinders. I'm going to have to ignore these poor people that want my help and need my help because I have to take care of myself. Well, that's the way to have many a curse. See, we think we're avoiding financial difficulty by withholding from those in need. Oh, that I don't dare help people because what will happen to me? I don't have much myself. And then we look up to God, please take care of me, provide for me. And he says, no, sorry. You can't help the poor. All I can do is curse you, not bless you. And so we need to be careful that we don't become covetous, because covetousness is often an excuse and a reason for hard-heartedness and unmercifulness and a refusal to help others. Jeremiah 17 verse 11, it says there, as the partridge sitteth on eggs and hatcheth them not, so he that getteth riches and not by right shall leave them in the midst of his days, and at his end shall be a fool. That he'll die out from whatever he does get before his life is half over, and everyone will look at him and say, what a fool. He did all those wicked things. He gave all his time and effort. You know, he was willing to step on his mother if he had to get more money. And now he's gone. Everything he accumulated is left behind. And you look at him, you shake your head and say, what a waste. How could anyone throw their life away like that? He would have a reputation for being a fool. Why? Because he got riches, but not by right. A couple more. Ezekiel 22. Verse 13. God says, I'll read verse 12 too. In thee have they taken gifts to shed blood. Thou hast taken usury and increase. And thou hast greedily gained of thy neighbors by extortion, and hast forgotten me, saith the Lord God. So again, as soon as we put our heart on money, we've forgotten God. We're no longer concerned with doing what he wants, but doing whatever it takes to get what we want. Behold, therefore, I have smitten my hand at thy dishonest gain, which thou hast made. That gives me the picture of someone walking up with his hands just full of money, and God smacking his hands and the money going flying all over the place. I smitten my hand, God says, at thy dishonest gain which thou hast made, and at thy blood which thou hast been, which hath been the midst of thee. In other words, even willing to kill for the sake of money. And then verse 27 says, her princes in the midst thereof are like wolves ravening the prey to shed blood and to destroy souls to get dishonest gain. In other words, nothing too wicked that they won't do for the sake of money. And yet, look at all the curses that dishonest gain brings. I think we'll close with Luke chapter 6, 24 and 25. But woe unto you that are rich. Here's Jesus Christ talking. Woe unto you that are rich. He's pronouncing calamity and destruction. For he says, you have received your consolation. Whatever enjoyment you got out of those things that you have, that's all you'll ever know. And is that good enough? Is that all we should look for? Whatever pleasure or enjoyment that money can bring us in this life, is that enough? Not according to Christ. He says, if that's all you have, woe to you. Woe unto you that are full, for you shall hunger. Woe unto you that laugh now, for you shall mourn and weep. Those who are rich and full and are laughing, you know, the laughter of the wicked, you know, gloating over what they've been able to accomplish and how wealthy they've become and how they've been able to pull off their schemes and take advantage of others, you know, boast themselves in their wealth and of their wicked devices that they use to get it. Jesus says, woe to them. You're going to hunger. You're going to mourn and weep. Now, the end of these things is not blessing, but curse. And so, again, if holiness is happiness, you know, if holiness is the way to blessedness, and if the love of money is the root of all evil, you know, it leads into all sorts of sin, then certainly we don't want to love money because it will take us away from the only way of true blessedness, which is to do what is pleasing to God, what is right in His sight. You know, if we want God's blessing, not just eternally, but even upon our labors and our homes and our lives in this world, ill-gotten gain is not the way to that. It's the way to the exact opposite.